welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 548. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vicroy, joined today by our favorite motorcycling writer, racer, and engineer, Jim McDowell. How's it going, Jim?
Doing pretty good, hey, Skyler. It was 71 today where I live. Very odd for February, and all the motorcycles were out. It was quite nice.
Oh, I bet. Everybody ran out. Might have been a few people who played hooky today, too, if that's the case.
It was a little light in the parking lot at work today, I will say that.
Excellent. We're on the opposite here. We're actually in our coldest part of, this year so far. But it was a bit chilly. We only got up like to 50 today, and we had a freeze warning last night. So that's pretty rare around my neck of the woods. So I guess we're swapping weather this week a little bit.
I'm not going to complain.
All right, so on this show, everybody, we're going to be covering the two tests, the MotoGP test from the Chang International Circuit in Buriram, Thailand, and then we're also going to be covering the final World Superbike test at Phillip Island before the upcoming race this weekend. Jim, it's back.
Yes, racing will be back this weekend. I can't be happier about that. Just, I'm tired of testing. I want racing.
Right, because now we can actually see what these results instead of making up a bunch of ideas, which we'll get back to in a little bit. But first, we have some donors. Why don't you go through those, Jim?
Yeah, big thanks to James D. Pretero. He is a subscriber now. Nick Saban subscribing and Alan Fleming subscribing. And if you can subscribe too, it would be great. You can just go to motopodcast.com, find a donate button on the left-hand side. You can subscribe for as little as $2 a month. And while you're on the internet, looking around and you're there, once you get this show from iTunes, leave us a rating. That helps us to get this show out to more and more people. And once the Motopod thank you to Moto Swiss, Max Star, Inchi, Graham Parsons, Izanchi, and T Baker 80 for leaving reviews for us on the website. Very much appreciate it, guys.
Yep. And if we missed you, sorry, a lot of times what we have here, especially on the iTunes, is that we can see our country. Martin, of course, of Motopod alumni, pointed out that we can just do a simple change in our address bar to see reviews on different countries. So if you feel like you've left us a review and we're not giving you your due, go ahead and email us to say, hey, I'm from this country. Why don't you go ahead and check out our iTunes feeds? There might be some reviews, questions, concerns, whatever it is, you can get to us. And our email, of course, is always motopod@motopodcast.com. All righty. So we're going to go into rapid fire. Maybe we should make like a little rap like sound we can cut into here or something, Jen. That'd be kind of nice.
You know, I might have to fire up the 450 KTM and give it a few braps so we got some full sound effect to put in there.
I'm down for that. But this week, we're changing things up, and this is the way we want to try to move this forward. This was kind of the original idea, and I think we got a little lost in our own topics, but hey, it's a fluid show. Things change. We are going to ask you, the fans, to ask us every week some questions that you would like answered. We'll try to give our short responses, and that's a big try. As most of you know, we like to ramble here on the podcast. However, this week we're going to start them off here. First question to the host. This is from Andrew Pilbeam. What is one thing you would change in motorcycle racing to get more people watching? Jim?
I would make it easier for everyone to get into the paddock and see the bikes, because that is where the coolness really is. If you can, at Indianapolis, you're able to buy a paddock pass and you can get close, but not right up to it. And I get it. You're never going to get right next to it. But it was nice to be able to walk down that pit lane and you could hear them warming up the Moto 2 bikes, the Moto 3 bikes. And that's very, very cool. And when you can get immersed inside of that, you really feel like you're a part of it. And I think that's the key to motorcycle racing. I think we all ride, and I think we're all a big community, and I think sometimes at races like that we're left as looking in over the fence and not feeling like we're part of that group. So that's what I'd try.
I think as far as me is, if we want to put butts in the seats at racing, we need to offer some kind of family packs. Motorcycle racing is a very niche sport, and I understand that they need to make their money to put these events on. But when you're looking to bring a family of two adults and two children to a race, and you're staring down the barrel of a weekend pass being $80 to $120 a person, Oh, you're starting to cut into people's Disneyland funds at that point. So I think maybe at least, you know, offering up something of value to kids, you can definitely take the Supercross method where they're, you know, $5, kid seats are just $5, you know, that kind of thing. Getting more people in, of course, will put more people interest, I personally think. Easier said than done when it comes to financials. And our next question comes from Don Parrish. He says, will you be doing any meetups at any MotoGP or Moto America events in the United States?
I believe that there will be one in COTA, the MotoGP race, because I think we all know that the four Americans are all going to be there. So that's a yes to that one. But the Moto America, not too sure about that one. I'm thinking about heading to Pittsburgh, which is very close to my home, to see the race that's there. But I think that one's a little better left to Scott.
Yeah, I know Scott's going to be doing a couple. I'm pretty sure he is going to be at Road Atlanta. He, of course, is going to be at COTA with Jim, myself, and Derek as well. And then I will be at two races out here. I will be at the World Superbike / Moto America round at Laguna Seca in July, and or maybe it's June this year. I'll have to double check with that. And then the Sonoma race as well. As far as doing a meetup at those events, I'm not 100% sure. It depends on what kind of interest they garner. The Moto America races are surprisingly fairly busy if I'm trying to run around and get interviews, or if I'm just – a lot of times I run, especially locally, I run into a lot of people I know from there, and I spend way too much talking in the pits. But if we hear about it and people want to let me know, so it's not that hard for us to go find you guys. But definitely the one that will be the biggest – most notable will be COTA. We're still trying to plan what exactly we want to do for that, because I don't know if we'll have that many people together. But, yeah, look for us there.
I'm looking forward to that one just because of the standpoint that I've done the meetup as the fan, and now I get to do the meetup as a host. So that's going to be on a different side of things for me. So looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Don Parrish also had a second question. This was directly for Scott. So, Scott, if you're listening, he was wondering if he may not make it to that Road America round of Moto America. So, Don, you may want, if you have Twitter, hit up MotorDog650. He may have an answer for you, or he might just jump back on the show to give you an answer here fairly soon when the Moto America season rolls around. Alan Martell wrote in with the final question this week's Rapid Fire. He goes, for the hosts, what are your most memorable moments at a MotoGP or World Superbike race weekend? And again, Jim, these are supposed to be short answers.
Oh, that was mean. Most memorable one for me would have to be 2005 US GP, Nicky Hayden winning in Laguna Seca. First victory on home soil for the first time that the series had come to the United States in 10-plus years.
Yep. I think mine was the year after at Laguna Seca. It was 2006. That was my first GP that I actually got to go to, and I didn't really know a whole lot about racing, and I became a much, much bigger fan of, one, Nicky Hayden after that weekend, and two, just MotoGP in general. That would definitely be the one that pretty much started all of this for me. So, all right, that concludes Rapid Fire. As far as listener feedback this week, we did get a couple emails that we did answer. There were some technical things, and we got some feedback, which I want to remind everybody that if you do have some criticisms or concerns with the show, please feel free to write in. We always love hearing about it, things we can adjust. For instance, we got an email this week. I can't quite pull it up right now. I should have been prepared with that. But anyway, it was regarding the sound of the podcast and it being kind of hit and miss and the quality not being good. We hear you. We here have actually been working on that here for the last few weeks, working with our software, educating ourselves. We all are very amateur when it comes to this stuff, except for Lynn. He's magnificent when it comes to computers. But we're working on it, and we're changing a few things. So please let us know if the sound is getting better, if this is what you like. Also, give us feedback on segments, what you guys want to hear. This show is for you. And big thanks out to Mark Jackson, who wrote in. He was responding to Phil's interviews, and he wanted to share his passion for the RG500s as well. He sent in a bunch of pictures, a bit of eye candy for those bikes. And, of course, once again, big, big MotoPod shout out to Phil for grabbing all those interviews. They were spectacular. Once again, I listened to all of them, actually a couple of them twice, because I was going in and out and I wanted to make sure I heard everything that was, you know, that was said on those interviews. Fantastic as always. So we're going to do a little different this week. We always start off with news, then we go to everything else. But the testing essentially is news. So what we're going to do is we're just going to open up. We're going to open up the MotoGP test first, kind of run through that, see how long me and Jim can talk on this podcast, and then we'll go right into the World Superbike and basically finish up talking about how fast Johnny Ray still is. So anyway, why don't you go ahead and lead us off for the test there, Jim?
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Moto2. Dunlap is changing the tire color coding. Only the softest compound will be marked so that fans and TV viewers will be able to tell who's running what right away. Good idea. Makes it easier. If we can tell what tire somebody's on, you can at least think about, is that tire going to last or not? Secondly, Mark Marquez and Andrea Dovizioso have a very different opinion on the testing that's going to be allowed for next year with 19 races on the schedule. Basically, Andrea doesn't like the idea that they're going to cut one test out and only have two tests and only test on 2 days instead of three. He feels that that's not enough testing to be done, that there's more things that he wants to accomplish, and he would rather have all the testing instead of this more limited amount of testing.
Surprise there, huh? The guy that wins the championships and has one of the best bikes on the grid doesn't think there needs to be more testing, but the guy who lost the championship thinks there needs to be just a bit more. Ooh, strong, strong thoughts there.
Very much so. I see where Andrea's coming from with that one, because if I've got that bike and it's not where I want it, and I'm searching for that perfect bike and I want that fuel and I want this and I want that, then I want as much testing as I could possibly have. You know, I want unlimited amounts of testing. You know, I mean, that's an unsustainable model. Look at what it did to Formula One. It basically almost killed the sport, because you had only the big teams, i.e. Ferrari, who've got a test track in their own backyard, were literally running a car every day. It's a matter of money, right? Because you have to be able to pack your team up. You've got to move it somewhere. So logistically, you're moving it to some track. You're running somewhere. And Andreas said, you know, hey, let's just do the Valencia test. Let's test in Jerez. Those are the easiest ones to get to. We can learn a lot from it. Yeah, it might rain a little bit in Valencia. Yeah, it's probably going to be cold, but that's where we're going to be able to learn what we're doing. But my counter to that is that if you don't go to these newer tracks, if you don't go to Thailand, if you don't go to Phillip Island, what about the tires? You know, it's really hard to build a tire that isn't going to disintegrate if you're not testing it on the asphalt or on the track or in similar conditions to where you're going to go. That's that.
Yeah, that is that. I don't think I need to say anything to add on to that.
Ooh, I got you all quiet there. That's amazing. So let's talk. Let's talk a little bit more about the MotoGP testing. Basically, if we look, we'll break it down kind of by days. On the first day, again, it basically was sort of who we all expected to be sort of up there. Obviously, the Hondas were very fast. Crutchlow was in first. Marquez had third. Pedrosa was fifth. So they seemed to have everything worked out there. Sort of the surprise was Alex Rins. He was second on the Suzuki. So he was a tenth off of what Crutchlow had did. So that was kind of interesting to me that, you know, Rins had jumped up there. Andrea Dovizioso was there in fourth. Petrucci was there in sixth. Jack Miller, really strong ride, was in seventh. Rossi was in the top, ten with an eighth place. Andrea Iannone was there on the other Suzuki, proving that what Rins was doing wasn't exactly maybe a fluke. And Jorge was there in 10th. Notably outside of that top 10 was Vinales, Zarco, and that was probably, and not really anybody else that I could think of that really should have been in there, but that's how it shaped up from the first day. So
yeah, get we used to that that theme, everybody, when we're going through this test about the Yamaha being outside of the top 10.
Yeah. So let's quickly look at, like, day two and day three, and then we'll kind of summarize everything and put it all together. So we kind of come out for that second day, and, well, the Hondas have showed up again at the top of the list. Marquez was first, Pedrosa was second, but Miller was third on the Ducati. Again, strong, strong ride by Miller on that Ducati. Well, magically, Vinales is now fourth today on this day. Then Zarco shows up on another Yamaha. Petrucci was there on the other Ducati. Rins, Crutchlow, Dovizioso, and Jorge in 10th. And just knocking on the outside door was Iannone. But Rossi was down in 14th. So the Yamahas have kind of changed places on us there. And I think Rossi had a big crash on the second day, if he did not, I know Rossi had a big crash. I can't remember if it was the second day or not. And that was rather interesting because Rossi got done and he off the bike, tumbles it through the gravel trap. He tumbles through the gravel trap and he's sitting there on his knees and he gets up and he kind of looks and his body language was something that I've seen and know very well. He was sitting there going, why am I in this gravel trap and how did I get here? Because mm-hmm. Rossi had that blank 1,000-yard stare, slumped shoulder look like, I just don't understand what happened. And that's not where you want to be in testing.
No, so that's not going to give you the confidence, that's for sure.
No, not at all. So of note, Hafi Sairen on the Tech 3 Yamaha definitely was putting a massive improvement in what he was running through. Now, he took 2 seconds off of his time from day one to day two, which was really good. Again, he's learning the bike. It's brand new to him, but I thought it was a good effort by Hafi.
Seconds is not necessarily the easiest thing to find. I mean, yeah, he is getting faster, but those 2 seconds, you know, got him within, you know, guys that have been riding in this series, you know, Mark Marquez and everything else. But if you look at back at who he's with and what he's, you know, you got to remember, this is his first test fresh on the bike. I mean, it isn't like he was at the Yamaha test track putting in a couple of laps who showed up. I mean, he stretched out the leathers, got on the bike, yeah, adjust the handlebars, adjust the foot pegs, ready, set, go. I mean, and, you know, it's a circuit that, you know, they haven't raced on before. That's massive.
Yeah. It was really good of him. I mean, you know, again, does this prove what we all know, that at Tech 3, they're known for finding that talent?
Mm.
You know, it seems like they somehow find that one guy that no one expected, and it comes good. And, you know, look what they did with finding Zarco, what they did with Folger, and you can pick 100 other names that's come through Tech 3. But maybe Hafi, maybe just his style, maybe he's just going to gel with that. And he's just going to take off and, you know, make us all look on in disbelief where we thought, no, this really can't happen. But, you know, Hafi maybe put in some strong top tens. Who knows?
Exactly. Let us catch a little rain, see what he does, too.
Yep. Give him a little rain dance there, too, and it'd be good. So the final day – sorry.
Yeah, on day three there has some interesting changes. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you will be explaining a few people's bad times and some really good times as well.
Yeah, we'll delve into that. So let's just kind of talk about who finished where. Honda again on top, Pedrosa this time. So that makes me stop and think for a second that whatever Honda's got, it must be pretty doggone close to being rideable by everybody who isn't named Mark Marquez. Mm-hmm. You know, Crutchlow was fast one day. You know, Pedrosa's fast the other day. It was kind of the same thing in Sepang, right? Crutchlow was very quick on one of the days. Pedrosa had a good day. I think he was quick on the second day. And this is the first time we've actually seen Marquez actually head up a day. So whatever direction Honda has gone here, apparently they've settled on whatever engine that they're going to use or whatnot. They've obviously picked a direction, and it must be a pretty good motor because it's right there with it. So we had that. Surprise, surprise, Zarco shows up second quick, which kind of mimics what he did sort of in Sepang. He started off slow, got faster each day, and put in a barn burner there towards the end, which
– Well, actually, he put that time in before lunch, and when Danny Pedrosa came out and set the second sub 130, Johan's team was already packed up and left the track. So even more impressive that they'd given a bit more time, he might have lowered it down even lower. Wow, there's some impressive language skill there. Good job. Hey, I'm going to shut up and let you finish now.
Are you sure English is your first language?
Oh, I speak English kind of good.
Yeah. The thing is, well, I guess what I was thinking about it from Zarco is the fact that each test, he has methodically worked his way into being faster and faster mm-hmm. and faster. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think he is on the 2016 frame with the 2018 engine in it.
Yes, that's so, where he went back to. He did test the 2017 frame there for a little while in Sepang, did go quick on it, but ultimately decided it wasn't necessarily the feel he wanted. And I think the factory was kind of pushing back, like, listen, we can't have you going fast on that 2017 because it's going to make some people look bad. All right, get your ass back on the 2016 so we can look good.
It isn't going to matter. Zarco is going to be fast regardless of what bike you put him on.
Exactly.
That isn't going to matter. Well, anyway, as we go down here real quick, Crutchlow was next. Marquez, Rins again, another great ride on that Suzuki. Miller again in the top 10 at sixth. Divizioso was there. Takagami was there on a Honda, which proves again somebody who isn't named Mark Marquez can ride that bike fast.
Yeah, strong ride by a rookie too.
Another strong ride by a rookie, Rabat.
Not rookie, new team.
New team, sorry. That's right. Rabat was there last year. Darn it, I got that mixed up.
You know what it is, Jim? I don't blame you. I'm not used to seeing his name in the top 10 either.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. And then Petrucci had top 10. But then come the Yamaha twins, Vinales and Rossi at 11 and 12. Mm-hmm. So, we got a lot to talk about there. So.
Yeah. I mean, less than a second out, but that's a factory. So, yeah. Anyway.
And then, you know, kind of down there, our good friend Hoppy Siren now taking only sort of maybe hundredths of a second out of what he did. He found 400ths. Mm. And like Colin Edwards says, you know, it's really easy to find a second or 2 seconds. Try finding tenths. Mm. That's when it's going to get hard. Yep. So, but again, it was improvement. It was very much improvement. But the big outlier for me, Jorge Lorenzo in 22nd on the Ducati.
What's going on?
Well, you know, from what I was looking at, they showed up. They started out on the 2018 bike. And after the first day wasn't bad, right? Because Lorenzo is close to the top. He's in 10, right? On a new track that nobody's really been to, looked pretty good. His second day, he was again 10, not too bad, but that third day, it just like he fell off the cliff. And there's some pictures and video of Lorenzo sitting in the pits on that day. And he has that 1,000-yard stare that Rossi had with the Ducati. And I'm really super scared about that. He's, you know, Lorenzo is all about the feel on the front end and being able to ride that bike on the edge of the tire and be quick with it. And whatever sweet spot that they had in Sepang, they've lost here in Thailand. And again, I think these tracks are somewhat similar in my feel, because you've got three long straightaways, right? But you have a hairpin there at the end of the second long straightaway. And then you kind of go back and you've got some medium speed corners, which is kind of like Sepang, where it's sort of, you know, not really fast, and you've got a tight hairpin here and there. So really, it should have kind of worked, I think, and it isn't. And the Lorenzo even brought the 2017 bike back out of the garage and rode it around for a little bit to try to get a back-to-back as to what's good and what's bad. And, you know, he kind of goes through and he says, well, I think we need a mix of whatever the 2017 bike is and whatever is good on the 2018 bike that has to be smashed together to make a bike that's going to be good for us. But it's going to take time to actually get to that. So that's not where your mind needs to be as if you're Lorenzo, right? I mean, Lorenzo is a very much a confidence inspired rider. And I think we saw that kind of when, like, he broke his collarbone in the wet there at Assen a few years ago. If the bike's right, he's right, and he's mentally there, you really can't beat Lorenzo. He's that good. But you got one small little hiccup in it somewhere, and it becomes the woe is me, I'm never going to figure this out kind of Lorenzo. What do you think about that one, Skyler?
You know, what's strange about that is that, you know specifically, and I know from being on the mechanic side, when you change too many things at once, you never find your way. I mean, we're looking at, I'm sure this was a different spec, you know, there's different fairings and everything else from the Sepang test. This is a different style of track. This track hasn't been bedded in. They don't have the wealth of data like they do Sepang. Sepang, you know, they go out there and like, okay, we got a different bike, but this is the gearing we ran last year. This is the setup. This is the electronics. Let's get it. We got a solid base. Let's tweak from there. they get to this track, and it's like, we got a brand new bike we're trying to develop, and we don't know this track, and Michelin's bringing some tires out that we don't know if they're going to work well on this track, which turns out they didn't necessarily work that well on the track, and they had to kind of switch it up there a little bit. But, you know, then you've got Dovizioso saying the 2018 bike is much better than the 2017. That's the way we have to go. It's like, uh-oh. Okay, well, the guy who finished second in the championship last year on your bike is saying the bike is good. The guy that you're paying a bunch of money to win the championship who finished, you know, down there and, well, God, I don't remember where he finished, sixth, seventh, right, is saying it's not. Now he wants to get to the next test and have another hodgepodge of a motorcycle where he's combining parts, where it's going to be different conditions yet again, and, the, you know, testing into the evening. You run around in circles making all those changes. It's going to be hard to find your base setup.
Yeah, and the biggest thing facing Ducati right now is they're sort of in a Yamaha situation. Mm. They got two riders that are on completely different paths. Mm-hmm. So there is not a clear path of development that Ducati needs to go down, like you said, right? That is the wrong thing the engineers want to hear, right? There's no way that you as an engineer want to stand there, or the suspension guy, whoever, that, well, I like it this, and I over here like this. We're not building motorcycles here that are based and tailored to your individual style. I mean, we're trying to make it as close to your individual style as we can to make it comfortable for you to go fast. But they're, instead of trying to converge to a solution, or at least running in parallel to each other, they're starting to diverge now, which is horrible. And the problem, the bigger problem, is we're going to go to Qatar. And when we go to Qatar, like I said, we're testing into that evening time frame, and that track is a wild card track anyway. And I'm not so sure that the data that you get from that track is any good to tell you which way to go in your development.
No. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to copy, and we're going to delete Ducati, fill in Yamaha, and paste. Because that's pretty much the exact same thing that's going on with that factory. They got the same problem. They got two riders. They got rider 1 and rider 1.1. Flip them on any weekend that you want. They're the best they got, right? Mm-hmm. So they're heading into the same problem. Now, rumors are already starting, and I think people just like to set rumors around Valentino Rossi.
I love rumors. Rumors. They're the best part of racing is the rumors. You know,
Valentino Rossi, of course, we started – remember last year there was all that talk that he said Vinales doesn't know what a Yamaha is supposed to feel like. And then after they started developing maybe towards what Rossi liked, and the tires changed, and then Vinales really couldn't get along with that bike. It kind of seems like that's where we're starting off this season, that Rossi loves the way the bike is breaking into the corner now, and it's more of his style, versus Vinales says, I can't get this bike into corners at all. I have zero confidence. He's basically pretty much thrown up his hands, and he's saying, like, I don't know what we have to do, but we need to go figure this out before Qatar. And when you're starting off your season, I mean, he started off with all the confidence in the world last year, leading all the tests, winning the first two races, and then he's starting off on the back foot continuing from last year. Not the greatest way to come into a season for Matt Vinales.
No. I mean, it was the worst testing he's had with Yamaha since he joined the team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, this whole Yamaha thing is like 2007 or 2008 when the wall went up in the Yamaha pit between Lorenzo and Rossi. Mm-hmm. That is where we are headed right now. I mean, you know, that Lynn Jarvis has got to be going crazy with this one. Mm-hmm. Because so someone has to make this decision somewhere and say, this is the direction we are going. Do you want to be that guy who's going to walk up to Valentino Rossi and say, look, sorry, Val, you are not who you used to be, and I don't know if you can actually win another world championship, but the kid over there in the corner is the future, and so we're going to have to build the bike for him. I don't want to walk up to Valentino Rossi and say that, but somebody's got to.
Mm-hmm. And this is while contract negotiations are going on at the same time for all of this. And, you know, Yamaha, like you said, Lynn Jarvis is going to be pulling his hair out, because he's also looking down a few boxes and watching Zarco and what he's doing. He's thinking, I really don't want to lose this guy. And, you know, how am I going to convince Rossi that, you know, hey, man, why don't you become part of our ambassador team and maybe look after our young guys and get them going? But you're not going to pull Rossi off that bike until he's damn well good and ready. And, you know, they've already lost, you know, Lorenzo to this, and they were able to somewhat replace him with Vinales. Vinales definitely hasn't gotten his fair shake at it. Give him some time, and he's obviously a proven rider. Just we need to get this bike dialed out for him. But you don't want to lose Zarco. I mean, you know, so far he's the leading Yamaha of the test, of the offseason. I mean, you look at the Yamahas, you go, oh, yeah, the Yamahas are struggling, and they always have to go dot, dot, dot. But Zarco's fast.
Mm-hmm. But I think the interesting thing is we have to understand, why is Zarco fast? Mm. To me, it's not just that he's on the 2016 chassis, okay? Zarco is on a satellite team. Mm-hmm. He has very limited things that he has to test. They've given him kind of a motor that has a bit more revs than what he's had previously, but he doesn't have – he's still a couple hundred revs short of what the factory bikes actually have. And because of that, Zarco has only one thing to do, and that is fine-tune the suspension and fine-tune his riding style to the Michelin tires. So if you don't have anything and you can't figure, you know, when I was racing bikes, we didn't have the money to buy brand new tires to go every weekend and every race like some of the other guys had, right? Mm-hmm. So it made no benefit to me to go out and practice on a set of brand new tires because I wasn't going to have those brand new tires when I was racing. So all I did was run on used tires, and I figured out how to make my motorcycle go as fast as I could on used tires, which is where Zarco has been. You know, mm-hmm. He's sitting there with Guy Coulomb. They're tweaking on the suspension, which is where they're finding – I think they're finding most of their time in the suspension. And I think they're also finding it on the weight bias of how they're moving the weight around in the Yamaha. I think that's where it is because the big difference is the tires, right? When the Yamaha was an incredible bike on Bridgestones, it was all about – because the Bridgestone has a few on the front end that's basically, according to Colin Edwards – almost uncrashable. It's got that much grip from the front. The front end's incredible. So you have that feel on the front that everybody wants. You can go faster. But the problem was with the Bridgestone is you don't have very much rear grip. Their rear grip was terrible. Conversely, it's 180 degrees out of phase when you get on the Michelins. The Michelins don't have that front end feel or front end grip that they're actually really wanting to have, but their rear grip is incredible. So if you've been Yamaha and you started putting all that weight to the front because the Bridgestone can handle that, now you're able to really roll through and find that corner speed, and you can always sort of set the bike back up on center and make it run on the fat of the tire to get the acceleration that you want out of there. But if you're on the Michelins and you're still doing that and there's not that grip, you've defeat it what you got to do. You've got to push that weight and kind of push it backwards on the bike a little bit. Try to help the rear end become grippier and offset it so that you can get it around. Or you got to figure out where you're going to set it and pivot it, where that's where Marquez can pivot the bike, and he doesn't really have a problem. But
ladies and gentlemen, Jim's Corner was brought to you by Jim McDowell. Thank you.
I know, you told me to be short. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. This isn't the story. This is the part where we actually want to talk. This is what people care about. They don't care about all that other crap news and stuff. They want to hear us ramble on about this because that's the kind of information they want to hear. But yes. We're going to jump down because we want to cover a couple of these other guys. Then we want to cover the World Superbike. And then we're going to get out of your ears because I'm excited to get onto the racing. We're going to save it for this weekend. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, talk about Suzuki because, I mean, Renz, of course, we remember last year, missed a lot of testing. He was hurt early in the season, came really strong, came on good, really strong at the end of the year. And he's picked up right where he's left off, making his teammate look a little bit foolish at the same time.
Mm-hmm. But Iannone, his long stints race pace is really good. He just can't find the one lap wonder that his teammate has, you know, right. Renz has got, right? So is Iannone going to be there when it comes race time? Probably. So
this is going to be one of those things, right? He's going to have to watch out for it because if he doesn't have the single lap pace, but he's got the race pace, how's his qualifying going to go? Because that's going to determine if he starts in 11th and spends the whole time burning up his tires trying to get to the front, then that pace can be wasted.
Right. You're going to have to qualify. When's the last time, provided that it wasn't a rain race and everybody was changing bikes, that you saw anybody win from anything worse than sixth on the grid?
That'd be a Harry Lloyd question right there.
Yes, I know.
I'm sure it's more obvious than – and someone's probably yelling at their speakers right now, guys, Donington, 2000 – no. Exactly. Harry Lloyd would have pulled that out and told you exactly what leathers he was wearing as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, brand of boots and helmet and everything else.
But you do make a good point. I mean, at this level, you know, it's one thing to do it in a series where they rotate everybody to the back of the grid anyway and make everybody pass someone to the front. Don't need to name drop any series for that.
I don't know which one that is. I have no clue.
But it's extremely hard in MotoGP to, one, get to the front, but two, catch the leaders who are at the front because, you know, as you look in the test times, a field of 20 bikes covered by less than 3 seconds. You count 1,000, 2,000, 3, 24 motorcycles just passed you. Okay. Now you're telling me that one guy has got to pass all those guys to get to the front, but the guy at front has a clear track and he's running half a second faster a lap, even though you're passing people. Yeah. Good luck catching anybody up there.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. The thing of it is though, with Suzuki is that if you get one of these oddball kind of races that's going to kind of happen this year, you can see Rin standing on the podium in the dry very easily, right? I mean, okay, so maybe it's going to take a little bit of racing luck, right? You get, maybe Crutchlow kind of bumps Vinales in the first turn and we get three or four guys down. Rins is there, but I think Suzuki will come up with a podium on merit.
I mean, he could, yeah, and he could even do it. I mean, let's look at, you know, what we've seen the last couple of years. You know, it's your stars align. The conditions, you made the right tire choice. You got your electronics set up correctly, and the weather was ideal for the conditions your particular motorcycle likes. Yep. I mean, we saw that when Vinales snagged his first win, and he was, the eighth winner back in 2016 at Donington. Was that
Silverstone?
Or Silverstone, excuse me, yeah, where they got the ideal conditions. He had a good qualifying. He was up front, and it was a gloomy day that was warm. Exactly what they needed as far as conditions, and he took full advantage of that. Not to mention his confidence was, peaking at that time. So, you know, Rins, obviously, he's no slouch. Last year, you know, wasn't the best example of his talent because he spent the first half of the year hurt. But, I mean, this guy is coming out, and he's been quick at both tests, but Iannone, you know, maybe that's putting some fire to him, but him working on his entire race pace, I got to say, if he can be in the top six in qualifying and he has race pace, I'd much rather have that than a fast lap.
You know, I don't know. Car racers will tell you it's easier to make a quick car last longer or, you know, be more consistent than it is to take a slow car and make it fast. So I'd like to have a fast motorcycle regardless and somehow figure out how I'm either going to save the tire or whatever it is that I'm going to do for all that. But to the point of this crazy kind of season, that's what Crutchlow has predicted. Crutchlow has said it's going to be one of these crazy seasons. It's going to be super unpredictable. It's going to be up. It's going to be down. And it's going to be whoever gets on top of the set of tires figures it out for this track with this temperature, with this, that, and the other, which brings up another kind of off-the-wall point, kind of with Ducati and all of this. There is that rumor, and nowhere I've read have I found it confirmed, but it's believed that DG Jalinha, they've got some sort of tire modeling software thing where they can figure out kind of how the suspension is supposed to be set and kind of the life expectancy given X amount of frictional grip there is on the tarmac, and they're modeling the tires to predict what's going to happen.
Jeez.
So if the question is, this makes sense to me in a little way because they were really good in Sepang, right? Mm-hmm. They go to Thailand, a new track, new surface. There's no data to put into that to model, right? So if there's no data, then they can't predict what the bike should actually be. Where I'm fascinated by this is, okay, when we move to Qatar, someplace that Ducati has done well over the years, and if they have this technology or they're able to model these tires in some way to help set up the bike, if they go right back to the top of the timesheets, what happens? Right? So, I mean, it's kind of like we went the long way around on that one, but it was something to think about.
Yep. Those who are making a long way around because they need more horsepower is Aprilia. I mean, this is flat out. The bike looks good. They've got decent riders. I mean, this is probably the easiest one we're doing. More power. But then again, who doesn't want more power?
You know, that's an interesting thing, too, because it's a matter of how you're going to find that horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a bore and a stroke limit. You have a bore limit, right? So you got to have – everybody's got to run, like, I think, what, 81 millimeters to the rule book? So the pure physics of how fast you can move that piston up and down, how many feet per second it can survive at, is limited. So it's not like they can just go back and turn the revs up and run another 3,000-4,000 RPM more, because the motor's not going to survive. So the question then is like, they've obviously got to do some work in the head somewhere, because they're not flowing the air properly.
Right, and it's like you can't dump a bunch more fuel into it. You've got limited fuel capacity as well.
Yeah, you have 22 liters, and that's what you have to make, and that's the distance. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, on an aside, did you ever think about that? You got 22 liters. Did you ever take like 10 2-liter bottles and try to figure out how much it weighs? Yeah, because I mean, that was kind of like things like we had a big party one time. We had a bunch of 2-liter bottles. I'm thinking, my God, this is how much weight's in a MotoGP bike and fuel. They're going to burn this much weight. It's incredible. So, anyway, just a weird tangent.
Jim's corner next week, fearing science experiments he does with his family and liter bottles. Anyway. All right. So kind of getting into more of our more boring part of it here. KTM. I mean, it's just they are where they are right now. Pulse Bar goes out. He's injured. He's hopeful to make it back by Qatar. If he does, what kind of shape he'll be in, I'm not sure. That guy got pretty beat up. And when you have a herniated disc in your back, it's not something you really take lightly. That's something you need to heal up. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he still has his ankles banged up. But they're kind of like, you know, you have here in the notes, and I'll let you expand on this further. They've reached the hard part.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, they were at 1.3 seconds off the pace. They're now a second off the pace. It's really hard to figure out how to find that last second, because now – you're riding that bike. You've been given a bike that's as good as the factory can make it right now. So now you need a set of very good riders to push the motorcycle to the edge and figure out that there's a ledge after the edge to sort of be Matt Oxley-ish. And you're going to have to figure out why the bike doesn't work in that distance between the edge and the ledge. So that's where they're at right now. And that's really hard to find that time, because it's going to be small fractions of things that it's going to take. It's a literally moving the swing arm pivot 1 millimeter up will suddenly make the bike magic. Or it's going to be, you know, it takes a tenth of a kilo stiffer rear spring. Or it's literally just one of the shims in the dampener on the shock that you change the orifices that the oil gets pushed through. So that makes it rebound just that little bit slower to maintain that grip. And that's where they are. And they've got to figure that out. Their big problem is that they've got that steel frame, that steel trellis frame. So they really don't have a lot of, you know, guys that are there that have experience with that kind of steel at that high level where they are. Because everybody's used to an aluminum frame and how it works. So they're carving their own path, and they're going their own way, and it's going to be a little bit tougher. And I think those bikes actually have show all suspension on them too. Or sorry, white power. So they're definitely cutting their own road, and it's going to be hard for them to do it. But they're crazy enough and they're hardworking enough to do it. So it's going to be – the fun for me is going to be watching them find tents. And a few more tents, you know.
And some of that's going to come down to, you know, riders. You know, not to knock Bradley Smith and Paul Espargaró, but I'm going to knock them a bit. They're not the top of the class, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is why KTM is probably working really, really hard to secure Johan Zarco's services. He looks like he's a guy that's going to be able to run up to the front. And, you know, if you can get a guy who would, you know, who is on the front of the field on your bike, and your bike goes faster, you know where it was. If your bike goes as fast, you know where you are in the development. But, you know, speaking of development, we can hit this quickly. Honda.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten faster. Mark Marquez is working on his racecraft, and we're all screwed.
Yeah, it's like the three worst things you want to hear. Honda figured out how to go fast. They figured out how to make it easy to go fast. And, well, Mark Marquez is on their team.
Yeah. So
it's like bad day to be anybody who isn't there with a wing, you know?
Yeah. Crutchlow, so. Super unpredictable. You are correct, sir. From positions 2 to 24, it's very unpredictable.
Yeah.
Top spot right now? Ooh, man, this is looking like it's going to be give me 6. I'm just saying.
Exactly. You know, it's like they say. The Honda lane has now been reinstated again because mm-hmm. Honda has found the horsepower again, the thing that they've always been good at. And now I think it has more to do with the fact that they have now had a year of time on the Magneti Marelli system that controls everything.
Yep.
So they've been able to now tune that electronic system into their machine, to their motor characteristics, and to how Mark Marquez wants the motorcycle to ride, to feel like when he is riding it.
Well, so they changed the firing order of that engine this year too.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like you said, it's smoother for Marquez to ride, so he doesn't have to be as violent. I mean, mm-hmm. If you're looking at the rest of the paddock and he's having an easier time to go fast, and right now he may not be leading the timesheet, but rest assured that man is just testing a few things. Oh, mm-hmm. I'd be very, very concerned if I was the rest of the paddock for Mark Marquez this year.
I do not think we have seen Mark Marquez actually try to put in a fast lap yet.
No, not even close.
That is scary to think that boy is that quick without that, which it goes back to this kind of this difference between how Lorenzo rides a bike and how Marquez rides a bike, right? Lorenzo mm-hmm. is all about the side edge grip, and he makes the big arcing corner and he carries the corner speed like crazy through there, right? Well, we talked about how the Michelin doesn't have the grip on the front that like a Bridgestone has. So that's very hard. Well, Marquez has got the same problem, right? Well, that's just the difference. Marquez is so used to sliding a bike. When the front end starts to go a little bit because there's too much weight on the front, he just snaps the throttle on the back, steps the back end out, and he finishes off the corner because what he does is he creates his own weight transfer. He took enough weight. He has so much fuel, Skyler, that he can roll the throttle on or snap the throttle on that little bit that's required just to take just a pound or a half of a pound of weight off of that front Michelin, and it suddenly just grips and holds again because now it's not struggling because there's a limited amount of grip there, and Marquez has got the incredible feel to know what he's got to do to make that bike transition to where it needs to be so that he can actually go fast on it. And that's his magic. That's why Marquez is so fast all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, plus that's just
that
incredibly skilled.
That, and he's got balls he has a hard time walking around with. But anyway,
yeah,
we're almost 50 minutes deep into this podcast, which leaves us a good solid 10 minutes to talk about World Superbike, and that's probably all that we're gonna really need. World Superbike testing it at Phillip Island's like, okay, cool. There's some interesting notes, but I mean, we'll have much more to say next week when we get on to the race. But stop me if you've heard this before, okay? I'm going to read some names off in a particular order, and you tell me if this sounds okay. All right. So. Mm-hmm. Day one testing, Marco Melandri, Ducati, Tom Sykes, Kawasaki, Jonathan Rea, in third place, Kawasaki. Let's jump to day two real quick. Jonathan Rea, Kawasaki, Marco Melandri, Ducati, Tom Sykes, Kawasaki. Okay. But there is a name missing in that top three that we've been saying for the last couple of years, and he's struggling a little bit.
Where's Chaz? Yeah. Chaz is struggling, that's for sure. Not sure why, but he's,
So here's the interesting thing. You know, they got hit by the Reds, and Chaz is actually probably the biggest opposer to this outside of Parariba, because Parariba is not thrilled about them taking the Revs away. Of course, all the top teams are not thrilled about Revs being taken away because – I mean, why would you spend a lot of money in racing to have someone control the speed of your motorcycle? it's counterproductive. Anyway, but, you know, if he's losing revs and that affects the top end, Chaz is a much bigger rider than Marco Melandri. In fact, there's a rumor that if Marco Melandri stacks himself in two, he can look Chaz in the eye. Although that was kind of mean, but
that's just wrong.
Anywho, the test, you know, Marco Melandri finishing, then we said Tom Sykes, Jonathan Rea, third place, right? Leon Camier, there's the guy that I really want to talk about.
Yeah.
Bringing that Honda up to fourth on a track that requires fourth. Now, Phillip Island is a bit of a dummy track when it comes to racing, right? Fast, flowy, hides a lot of the problems a lot of motorcycles have.
It hides the acceleration deficit that the that the Honda has, because it's just wide open, right?
Exactly. And it will kind of cover the track. We'll see after the test if the tires can last for the whole race. But Phillip Island can also, you know, depending on how the bike uses its power, can make tires last longer, because they're going to spend a lot more time on the sides of the tires than they are down the middle applying the power. And a lot of tracks are stop and go. Riders tend to burn up the tires, spinning them up out of corners. So that can also be something that's masked at that track. But we've also seen in the past that's something that track can also highlight, the fact that you burn through tires. I mean, just look at the Aprilias. I think have had a hard time making their tires work around that track in the last, especially last year.
It's definitely one of those things where the tire is critical at Phillip Island. I think it puts more demand on a tire than probably any other track that you're at, in just what you need from a rider standpoint to be confident and to go fast there, and how much grip you need and how long it's going to be. So it's a weird set of – it's a unique set of demands that are required for that racetrack, that's for sure. So, again, we'll know more here when we get to race day.
Three days. And there's one thing I love about Phillip Island leading off the season. It means I can watch the races a day ahead, because Friday, you know, Thursday night is Friday qualifying. It's like, all right, sweet. You know, by the time Saturday at 10 o'clock rolls around, I'm done watching racing for the week. So we get the podcast recorded early if we really wanted to.
Lucky you.
So we're going to bump down here through. So it looks like Leon Cameron fourth, Michael Vandermark on in fifth, Chavi Forrest sixth, Eugene Laverty in seventh, Alex Lowe's eighth, Jordi Torres, who made the switch over to Envy Agusta, in ninth, and like we said, Chaz Davey in 10th. Loris Baz sitting in 11th on the Aprilia. So he's making his way after being in the MotoGP paddock for the last 3 years. Good to see him back on the BMW, hopefully moving up towards the front. Rookie Top Rack Razig. You know, we got criticized in an email that Americans do not know how to pronounce these names, and that the Brits, and especially Harry, had these names down. Well, I will give myself a little defense that Harry had to do that shit professionally, and he spent many a time going down and phonetically breaking these names down because he couldn't screw that up. And he got his start off in the CEV, where the names were even harder to pronounce. But duly noted, will take some opportunity to get the names down correctly, so we don't sound like a bunch of doofuses over here. And we're already good at making ourselves look like that to the rest of the world currently. Jake Gagne for our American watch down in 17th. He was a couple seconds back of the leaders, still finding his feet on the bike, still trying to find his way. And then, of course, PJ Jacobsen, he's on a bike that, once again, just like the Honda, not the best bike, even though Leon Camier is doing great things with it. That just goes a testament to how strong of a rider Leon Camier is. PJ finishing down in 22nd on the first day, while that team goes ahead and tries to get that bike developed, and PJ gets used to this super bike at the track. And then, you know, back to business as usual, like we were saying in day two. Jonathan Rea out front. Although Jonathan Rea, I think it was the first day, he wadded his Kawasaki up pretty good. But the second day was a little bit better conditions and seemed to not really slow down the three-time champ. But three in a row, mind you. But things will be interesting this year. He goes out and wins the first three races or podiums in each. I mean, they're going to start applying those penalties to the Kawasakis. You know, we're going to see what the racing is going to be. I think this is going to be a very much wait and see thing. If the racing is fantastic and he still wins, but it's like, you know, they're slicing and dicing per lap like a Moto3 race, I don't think many people will complain. If Jonathan Rea wins the first three races, they take 250 revs off, and then he finishes sixth for the next three races, I think we're all going to have to sit around and be like, well, this is kind of stupid. I mean, what's to say that he doesn't finish those races because of the type of tracks Kawasaki's like, and then the other tracks are Ducati tracks, and now they're penalizing. Not saying it's the easiest thing to do to balance the series, but I think the continuous tweaking of the rules throughout the season, penalizing good results, not the best. I think if you want to imply certain rules maybe in the beginning of the season and seeing how it plays out, that's fine. I mean, in the case we've seen before, like when Ducati when they no longer could make their, you know, the power that they needed to be competitive, they had to run a bigger CC bike to make the engines last. Then they had to be, you know, adjusted to go, okay, you can have your bigger engine, but we're going to watch the weight on the motorcycle to kind of balance these out. A little different of a scenario, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everything's all fair across the board here. So we'll have to see where they're at. And then it gets more confusing in the following year. Okay, yeah. So does it get, you know, Ducati, where do they start next year when they bring out their brand new motorcycle?
I think the you know, in World Superbike, they've backed themselves into a corner with this rev limit rule. This was like a bad news idea from the very beginning. I would have never have gone down this road. I would have gone, if they really, really wanted to do something, I think the easier thing to do would have been to put a restrictor in the throttle bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. So you say, all right, we're gonna run this throttle body and, you know, I don't know what they are, say 34 millimeter. Well, okay, now you can't run anything bigger than a 32. We're going to give you a 2 millimeter restrictor to put in there, which I think would have been a better thing to do. I think putting weight back on the bike would have been a better thing to do, right? Because the bike is what it is. You know, to artificially start changing where the bike can rev to is ridiculous. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I think there was a myriad of ways that you could manipulate and make things better, but they chose to use this rev limit, which I get it. It's easy to sit there and dial it in and dial it back, but
right. It's also a cost efficiency thing, yeah, right?
Right.
I mean, you can go over there and take a couple revs off. The problem with adding weight too is that can screw up the balance of a motorcycle, what they're setting, right? And something right. They're gonna have to work with, and they can't work off previous data because now we're at this track this time around this year, and we're 5 kilos heavier.
Right. But I think if you give the team the freedom of where they were going to put success ballast, if you will, then you can minimize it, right? And you could actually make it to where it's easier, because if I mount, you know, if my ability to turn left to right in chicane is relatively slow, it's maybe because I have a lot of weight too low. Well, if you give me a 3 kilo weight penalty, I now put that 3 pounds higher up, you know, put it on the top of the back of the rear cylinder head, maybe. Now maybe my transition left to right is a little bit faster. So it's not really as bad as it sounds if you are provided the freedom to put it where you want on your motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole other set of problems, because then you're going to get people building bikes that are super light because they're going to want that weight, right, to make minimum, right? But I know how to play this game, you know.
Yeah.
It's same now. Oh, well, hey, if I'm going to be docked 10 kilos for success ballast, well, I'm not, and my minimum weight is, I don't know, pick a number, 300 kilos, right? Then I'm going to build a bike to 290 kilos and stack the weight on there where I want. Mm-hmm. There's no good way to do it, right? There's no good way to be able to monitor and police what you're doing here. It just doesn't work very well. You know, to me, the better solution was sort of how it was done in MotoGP. You're defined by a true bore and stroke. This is it. You're allowed 4 cylinders maximum. Here's your bore. Your bore dictates your stroke because you can't have too many feet per second on the piston. Now you're going to go racing. That's why the racing's even in MotoGP. It really is, because the motors are basically – they can only rev so much, right?
Well, that and tires and electronics.
You've now given everybody a stock set of electronics and whatnot, but – are you going to run the manufacturers off if they can't develop and test their traction control systems for the street?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they created their own monster here, and I don't know how they're going to work themselves out of it, but I don't like the idea.
No, I'm not a big fan of it either. I mean, but I will give World Superbike credit that they are trying everything to make their series better, and that they're it may not be the right decision, but at least they're trying to make decisions, not sitting back and just letting it burn down on its own. So I will give them all the credit in the world. They try rearranging people on the start. And to be honest, it's just a change in rules, and nobody likes change. I mean, if this is the way going forward it is for the next 20 years and the racing's fantastic, no one's ever going to bitch about it from the people who jump on right when the way it is now. We're just used to the way it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not maybe the biggest fans of what we consider manufactured racing, mm-hmm. but if it's putting butts in the seats and racing is good, hey, you know, if MotoGP, if the 1,000 start going too fast and they all ride 600s, no one cares about track times and lap records. It's if the racing is good or not. If you want a great example of that, go watch F1 sometime. All right, so let's burn down through the rest of the results and we'll get the hell on out of here because we're closing in on an hour. All right, so like we said, we had Jonathan Rea. He was in first, and or finishing the test in first place leading into the weekend. Marco Melandri in second, Tom Sykes third, Eugene Lavity bringing in the pre-day round in fourth with a strong finish, Chavi Forrest, who wrecked his bike and had to wait to get back on at lunch, finishing fifth, which was a good strong ride, Michael Vandermark bringing up the pair of the Yamahas with Alex Lowe tailing behind him in seventh, Leon Camier in eighth on the Red Bull Honda. Loris Baz now up in the top 10, so he's coming on strong. Lorenzo Savadori on the other Aprilia in 10th. Chaz Davies lingering back there 11th, but he is still only a second off the pace. And, Jim, we know for sure a second at Phillip Island is a half a second at any other track.
Agree.
Rookie Toprak Razagatl. Oh, man. Every time I look at it, I feel like I know how to say it, just don't. Razgatliglu. You know, I'm going to have to go back and listen to
the podcast. I think it might be like Razgatlu because it was like Sofalu.
Yeah, so but I think something close like that.
I know. Yeah, the commentator for Eurosport in Turkey.
And actually said it the correct way. And even then I was like,
yeah, it was to find that again.
We'll try to break it down phonetically and get it down this year because I get a feeling we're going to be saying his name a lot. We really should learn how to say it properly. Jordi Torres in 13th, and then we have Leandro Marquardo in 14th. Jake Gagne in 15th. Troy Herfoss, he's going to be making a one-off, I do believe. He's a local Australian rider in 16th. Yanni Hernandez on the Pedregini. Kawasaki in 17th. Roman Ramos, he's on the Go 11 Kawasaki in 18th. Wayne Maxwell, he's another Australian, going to be making a one-off ride there in 19th. PJ Jacobson finishing in 20th ahead of Daniel Falzon and Ondrej Jezik finishing at the rear in 22nd. So leading into this weekend, honestly, it's testing at Phillip Island. These boys all go fast at Phillip Island. If you qualify in the top 15 at Phillip Island, you've got a chance at winning the race, and that's not even a joke.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, right now, I'm not betting against Johnny Rea to win it.
Nope.
No way, no how. And you can invert the podium any way you want, but figure it's Melandri or Sykes.
Yeah, it's just, Davies, that's just how it's going to be. He's going to get back to the front. It's just going to be race days. He's got race craft. He will make his way back to the front.
Has Davies ever actually really done any well at Phillip Island?
I don't think he has. See, this is why we need Harry on the show. We need him. He could just be like our Spalders. Remember how they would just like cut to him if you ever watched the Eurosports and he would jump in and give like all the facts?
He just needs to be on the show live and not say anything and just like text us like, dude, it was this. Okay, cool, got it. You know?
Or just
need
have,
to hear
like,
him whistle in my ear.
He has like the mute button, just kind of like jump in over us, like press the button and be like, actually, boys, Chaz Davey goes quite well at Phillip Island, if you remember back when he was on the track, you know, something like that.
Yep.
Anyway. Fantasy, the MCM Fantasy League, or Fantasy League, or whatever it's going to be this year, probably not going to happen. Nothing has changed leading up to this weekend's racing. There are some other fantasy series out there. I'm not 100% sure if we're going to join up or get anything started. It's something I'm going to look into this week. Jim, you're free to look for it. Andrew, anyone can look into it, maybe get something started. I know we've had people talk to us before about joining certain leagues. We're always going to stay away from any pay leagues or anything like that. But, we'll try to get something together. If not, unfortunately, this may be a segment that goes away this year. Might return in future podcasts, but not currently this year. And, of course, we have upcoming racing. This weekend, it's back. We're starting the season off World Superbike at Phillip Island. What are you looking forward to most this weekend, Jim?
Just the fact that there's no more testing. It's for real. That's the part that I love. It's like now there's 25 points up for grab and a trophy. I'm fine with that. That's how it should be.
50 points.
I'm 25 a race is what I was trying to go to. I'm an engineer. You expect me good at math? No, not this hour.
Wait a minute. How's that working? All right, folks. Remember, you can reach us at many ways, but first of all, you reach us the email. Wow, that was just a terrible way of doing that. And we've got the notes right here and just can't. Anyway, you can always email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com or facebook.com/motopod. That's the Motopod fan page. Please like and subscribe for updates. That is also where the majority of the rapid fire segment questions will be coming from. So pay attention there if you don't already. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Motopod. That is at @moto_pod. You can follow us there for news announcements, general motorcycle banter. I, of course, am on Twitter at SkylarV28, the same name on Instagram. Jim, where can people find you?
Same name for Twitter and Instagram, and that's at MotoRGV.
All right. Derek, who is another one of our American hosts representing Philly, you can find him now on Twitter and Instagram at MotoDerekC. Andrew can always – see, it's funny if you say Andrew, of course, can be found at @Andy_course on Twitter. It's always a fun one. Of course, then we have our alumni. We can just go ahead and say you can reach them. Dave Neal, at Dave Neal Twitter. Martin Donington, at Motopod Martin on Twitter. Lynn Padilla, at Moto Lynn on Twitter. Scott Bolden, at MotoDog650 on Twitter. And Harry can be reached at HLComs on Twitter. All of those folks are fairly active on there. Express your feelings, have your questions, wish for them to be back so you don't have to hear me talk and babble on and screw up the end of the show. Go ahead, give them a shout, see what they say. As far as that, Jim, I think we've gone ahead and got out to where we wanted to get in the show. Try to get Kate, stay within that hour. We've rambled on long enough. You got anything left for the folks?
No, just tune in. Watch World Superbikes. It's Phillip Island. It's magnificent. Okay. It'll be great. Just watch it. All right. It's racing.
Before we go, top three, both races, go.
Johnny Ray does the double. I think Landry is next in the first race. I think Sykes gets the third with Davies fourth. Second race, it's definitely Johnny Ray, then Davies, and then Landry. Sykes will be fourth.
I, too, going for the safe bet as Johnny Ray doing the double. I've got Landry sliding in second on the first race, third on the second race. Chaz Davies getting a second in the second race, and a surprise podium by Toprak coming in the first race. Just throw that out there. I think that kid's going to be quite fast, and especially on a track like Phillip Island where he starts. Don't be surprised if you see him up there this weekend, folks. All right. For Jim McDowell, I'm Skyler Vicory. Thanks for listening to Motopod. We'll catch you guys next week.